Welcome to Social Creatures, a podcast from Sprout Social. I'm Kat, and I'm here to explore some of my favorite success stories from the world of social media. This is a space for everyone, and really, nearly anything goes. But what makes an account successful or popular? Honestly, it's hard to know, but that's what we're here to find out. Throughout the series, we'll talk with the brains behind the accounts you know and some that you don't, to explore the weird and wonderful ways that businesses, organizations, and individuals have achieved success on social media, all with tangible insights that you can apply to your own social strategies. And we'll be heeding the advice of Stacey, our social media agony aunt, who's here to guide you through some of your trickiest digital dilemmas. So this week, I'm joined by Owen Williams, a social media strategist with just about the most interesting professional experience ever. In a career spanning 20 years within the digital sector, Owen was previously the social media lead at BBC One and BBC Wales, as well as the head of editorial strategy for BBC Content Social. Nowadays, he's the founder and managing director of Simmel, which helps publishers maximize creative content, but above all, focuses and makes social media simple. We've got Owen here today to talk about chatterboxing. So if you're not familiar with that phrase, that's when people tweet about a show while they're watching it. So they're connecting with others and sharing hot takes and opinions and jokes all as fast as they're happening on screen. With one eye on the TV and the other on your phone screen, it is a genuinely great way to watch TV. Owen is also one of the funniest, energetic people I've met in a long time, so I literally cannot wait to hear what he has to say today. If you would like to follow his personal account, you can do so at O's Wills. Owen, welcome to Social Creatures.
Wow, what a lovely introduction. What a way to start.
Owen, I do think if we've had a guest on the podcast who lives, breathes and enjoys social media as much as you do, I'm struggling to think who that could be, which is brilliant and it's so exciting. So it makes me wonder, what is it that excites you the most about social media? And how and when did you come to the decision to make it the focus of your career?
I was a television producer. I was a children's television producer for many years. I know I look really young. It's polyfiller. It's holding it together. Thank you for saying as much. Back then, I was getting commissions for shows for S4C, the Welsh Language Channel. We were making this cookery series nominated for Children's BAFTA, and it was hilariously funny. My approach was emotive content that would resonate with the audience. Of course, social media didn't really exist back then. There wasn't a theory or a strategy really that was being shared about how these things worked. But I was creating content around a TV show called Cariad at Iaith, which in English means love for language. And it was a group of celebrities placed in this amazing sort of glamping resort in West Wales. They put them there to learn Welsh over the course of a week. And I sort of captured this because I felt it could be resonant for an audience, mostly on Facebook, some on Twitter as well, mostly on Facebook. And it really drew an audience. People really engaged with it. This was 2010, 2011, was pointing people to the Facebook page and to the Twitter channels, which is very, very early days, quite revolutionary back then, really. I was attended a conference. It was a sort of working group conference over the course of a few weeks, of a few months, I think it was, not long after we finished TX on Cariad at Iaith series. And the lady giving the conference asked, what have you seen on social media or the internet that has really struck you recently? And then this girl put her hand up and she said, the thing that's really struck me was the social media for Cariad at Iaith. The guy leading the sort of lecture just laughed and said, well, Owen did that. And she went, you did that? I went, yeah. And she went, it's amazing. I went, is it? I didn't have a frame of reference. You know, I was working on social content for various outlets at that point in time. But then I joined BBC Wales in 2013. It was the first ever social media lead there. The head of news and current affairs at the time called me the Axeman, because within 3 weeks I'd axed about 30 different Twitter accounts because they shouldn't have existed in the first place and they were terrible. It dawned on me very quickly that there was a rationale for what we did and how we did it, but I just needed a form of words. I recognised that emotive content worked on audiences and worked on people, but I couldn't structure it in my head and I'd never really given it due consideration. And I did a lot more digging and I've come up with this concept in time. It's something I've seen from various places, but information, identity, and emotion. That's my holy trinity of making content go viral. And that's, I do talks on these things nowadays. But information, how does a piece of content better inform me? And I've just sort of gone, right, how do I sort of put this through a sort of a filter for it to make sense to people and for it to make sense to those people I instruct in talks and seminars and keynotes? How do I drill down and go, right, what's the nub of this?
I have a million questions for you. I think before I go down the rabbit hole of television and social media and how they overlap, there is a chance that our listeners will be furious with me if we don't talk more about your recipe for going viral on social. So remind me again what it was. There was, I know it ended with emotions. Was it information? What was the middle one?
Go on, have a guess.
No, I should know. Information.
Information.
Oh, identity.
Yes, yes, you've got it. Information, identity, and emotions. So it's a sort of holy trinity, as I describe it. How a piece of content better informs me about the world around me. And when I say me, I don't mean me, Owen Williams, or you, Kat Anderson. I really mean the individual, the audience member. And I talk a lot about audiences because that's my BBC background. It's the individual that perceives that content once it's published. So you want to put yourselves in their shoes. And honestly, so many social practitioners would do a lot, lot better by placing themselves in the shoes of the person who's about to view their content rather than going, oh, I'll just type this. Information, how a piece of content better informs me about the world around me. Identity, how a piece of content better informs me about myself. And fundamentally, emotion, how a piece of content makes me feel. And what I'm talking about in feel is they're actually heightened emotions. They're sort of, forgive the filth, but arousal emotions. They're elevated emotions. You know, it's that dopamine hitting your brain. It's delivering more powerful emotions than you just sort of a general sort of smirking. You really want to elevate those emotions, right? Whether that's horror or excitement, or you turn them on in some way. Those arousal emotions actually work exceptionally well, because I talk about this as well when I do keynotes, but that idea of it being social media, yes, it's got to be about people. But when someone perceives content, it becomes selfish media. It's me, me, me media. It's how does it affect me? What does it say about me? What does it say about the world in which I live? And how does it make me feel? Information, identity, and emotion. All of those things. And that's the reason content goes viral. That's the reason dog owners see US GIs coming home from Afghanistan and the dog jumping all over them. So it's all of those things. And that's a very simplistic version of. But if you can deploy that strategy in what you do, if you want me to talk about the big cats thing, I will at length, because that is a crystalline example of that trinity working in practice. December 2017, I had marketing approach me with creative and said, hi, Owen, welcome. We've got this new series called Big Cats. We'd like to put it on social media. And I said, oh, okay, so Big Cats sounds interesting. Can I see that? And they said, yeah, yeah, of course, we'll send you the first few episodes. So great, great, great. Can you send me the trailer as well? And what they'd cut was a sort of widescreen television trailer with this long, languid look at a landscape at the start, this savannah with these big cats running, these lions running in the far distance, taken up a helicopter way off, you know, so as not to disturb them running across the savannah. I was like, on a screen the size of a matchbox, I cannot work out what I'm looking at. Those first 3 seconds are so vital. During this trailer, about 20 seconds in, this little tiny wild cat emerged from beneath a leaf in a forest. And I went, oh, that's what you put at the start of the trailer. That's how to drag people in. They went, oh, are you sure? I went, sure, sure, I know it. Anyway, that's what they did. And they made this square version and it was fabulous. And it's 2.5-3 million views. What we eventually got was this collection of videos that were so powerful and so resonant that every August the 8th, and of course every listener will know that's International Cat Day, these videos get released again. And it is the same source video on the same channel, on the same Facebook page, and they're just propagated once again through the majesty of Facebook cross-posting. And you're talking about videos with upwards of 350, 360 million views by today. And that's, what, 6 years later? But they are incredibly powerful, legacy, evergreen content for the BBC there.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. You know, when you think about stuff that does go viral for all sorts of different reasons, you're right. Because on different levels and different scales, you're like, oh, those three elements are totally adhered to. But as you know, as I mentioned in the introduction, we are going to talk about chatterboxing. I really love watching either something maybe controversial or just, you know, the Olympics happening live, or Eurovision is a big one and you see what's happening on Twitter. For an uneducated outsider, I would think this would be a big thing that TV producers are thinking about. Like, how can we make sure that we inspire a conversation? How are we going to think about how social will run alongside this program? Is that the case? Is it something that on the inside TV producers are thinking about?
The pressure is such on television producers, particularly in the non-SVOD, so in a non-streaming world, the pressure is such on them to deliver the TX show, the transmitted show, that other things often fall by the wayside. What you would end up doing was end up in a meeting with marketing a few weeks before transmission to talk about what we could do on social. And actually, we'd missed the boat by then, really, because what we should have been doing is working with a commissioning editor way back when it was commissioned to ensure we got the best out of things. We did work with the commissioners there and we worked with the independent television company. But again, getting someone in there right at the outset to work across it was slightly more difficult because it was a slightly looser sort of thing. What I love, though, is taking that sort of theory and going, right, how can we not necessarily take the program itself and distill that onto social, but how can we draw out elements of that show, or how can we talk around it in some way? Some early examples of the stuff I was doing at BBC Wales way back was there was a show called Hinterland, which was like a Scandi noir cop drama, really dark, set on the Ceredigion coast. See these wild sweeping vistas, beautifully shot. And I just started playing with it on BBC Wales social media and just started talking about the fact that in one shot, they're in outside Aberystwyth, Borthwy, and they take a road and they end up in Aberystwyth. But you can't go on that road toward Aberystwyth because we know that road. So you could talk about that on social media. And people from that area would be killing themselves laughing because, yeah, you can't go that way. That's just the decision they've taken. And also in Borth, right, this tiny town on the Aberystwyth coast with one single train line running through it, during this one shot, about four trains ran through. There's like one a day. And people are just going, where are all these trains coming from? And the other thing was most people in it had a beard and a bobble hat on. So you're guaranteed to have a murderer when there's a beard and a bobble hat. So I was playing on these themes. And this was sort of 2016. And the marketing department were like, you can't do that. You've got to have respect for the source. 5 years later, everyone's doing it because it's this extension of brand, as it were. It's recognizing that audiences, they're engaging with a concept of an idea. And then you've got to run with it. So, for example, with Big Cats at BBC One, I went in with this argument that we've got the science of these cats, and that's really important. So we need to fold that in some way. But in the first episode, in the 6-part run, the audience just went, oh my God, look at the tiny floof, oh my God. And I went, yeah, okay, that's what we need to do. And then one evening, I'm sitting in my hotel room and it's on. A couple of people started posting pictures of their cats watching the show Big Cats. And I just went, I'm just going to do it. Hashtag cats watching big cats. And I think you can still probably find that on Twitter. Hashtag cats watching big cats. And that's me running BBC One. And I just said, send us your cats watching big cats. And we got thousands of photos. And the following week then, we got people sending dogs. And I said, send us your dogs watching big cats. And there they were. And I'd comment on these cats and retweet them. And people just thought it was amazing. I think if you are too closely aligned with the content, the difficulty is for producers and commissioning editors in television is letting go of the thematic driver that they want to parlay to the audience through dint of having spent money and time and energy and resource on making this beautiful thing they've made for television that's half an hour long. And you've got some social producer sitting there going, ah, look at his bobble hat. That's really difficult, commissioning editors. You have to work directly with each other, but you also have to recognise that people's disciplines are so, they come from two different angles, but they both want to achieve the same thing, which is reaching people through the power of the brand.
Now, here at Sprout Social, we know that social media is a wild and wonderful beast. It can surprise and delight, but it can also confuse and perplex even the hardiest of social media users. Who better to turn to for help than our social media expert, Stacey Wright, who's here to answer your questions over a cup of tea and some biscuits in the part of the show we like to call Sound Advice.
Right, I've got my cup of tea and I've got my letters, which can only mean it's time for us to take a break and cozy down together. This is the part of the podcast where I, your social media agony aunt, Stacey, guide you, our dear listeners, through your trickiest digital dilemmas. Right, let me see what social media conundrums you've sent my way today. Dear Stacey, I'm writing to you from a financial services company aimed mainly towards small businesses to offer tax advice. I've managed to secure a budget as part of our VAT and tax returns campaign launching soon, but this will be the first time that we will be creating and launching social media advertising. The objective is to drive new, qualified leads, so LinkedIn feels like the safest bet. But as it's so specialised and a competitive space, I have concerns that we will burn through the budget too quickly. What questions should I be asking our media agency to make sure that we are setting ourselves up for success and not a 0% return rate? Aiming to spend money to make money? Sav. Sav, I know how much those cost per clicks on LinkedIn can sting, especially if you're not used to them. In terms of questions, the first one I would ask is, how and why has the budget been portioned in that way? If the budget has been allocated by your internal team to then present back to the media agency, I would ask, what is the lifetime value of a customer and what conversion rates do you normally see from other channels if this is the first time that you're doing social advertising? This will indicate a benchmark of what success looks like and therefore give you more questions to ask the agency to keep you on track. If the budget split has been proposed by the agency, ask them why they've portioned it that way and given you a certain percentage for social media. They see customers day in, day out. They know what successes look like for social ads and for your sector. And then you can start to ask those follow-up questions around creative. What works well? What doesn't? And if you have creative assets already produced, what's their thoughts on it? Then you can start to ask, how can we measure the success of these in flight while the campaign is running? And what are the options to optimize this campaign while it is running? This is all linked. So if you have one version of an ad, you're a bit stuck. You have that one ad, you can run for the whole campaign. But if you have multiple options, then you can start to add flexibility and change maybe the format, the placement, copy, the narrative of a video and how that paces if you want. And then start to talk to them about budgets. Will it launch with a high daily budget and then drop down as the campaign wears in? Or will it ramp up towards a key moment? So in your case, Sav, a tax return deadline date. I'd also ask, why is LinkedIn right for this campaign? Yes, it's very powerful, especially in the B2B space. But what about all the small business users that are active on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter to promote themselves? They're on those platforms to market to their own audiences, but they're also available in those networks to be marketed to by you. YouTube is another option here as well. Search history can tell a lot about a person, including things that publicly they don't want to admit about themselves, but it could be a good place to start targeting small business owners from there too. Whilst leads are the most powerful metric in this case, always I suggest having followers as a soft target for social ad campaigns. It's great to engage with people using the marketing team's wallet, but followers are not only free to reach the majority of the time once they follow you with organic content, but they also offer a wider pool of warm leads for your next campaign. Sav, thanks so much for sending in your social media quandary. I hope this will help you not find campaign planning for social media so taxing. Until next time, listeners, stay strong and stay social. And now back to the interview.
Something that, again, has come up on this podcast is that people acknowledging that sometimes there is almost an innate sense with social media for what will work and what will not work. And I think it's very interesting to hear you talk about then how TV producers who are, you know, making a piece of art where it's a sweeping savanna and it's really beautiful and gorgeous, but how that program is going to be interpreted on social. Actually, we're going to have to find a little silliness moment or the moment that will capture our social media viewers' attention. And we maybe only have half a second to do that. And I know you mentioned there as well about people in Wales. I think that's such a thing when you see a program that's been filmed in a location that you know, and you go, well, that's not right, because I'm originally from Belfast and Line of Duty is terrible for that. Like, they're all over the shop. I wonder, you
did some work with Line of Duty, didn't you? And you made a particular social media experience off the back of Line of Duty, which was totally separate from the TV show, I believe. Could you tell us a little bit about that little magical moment?
BBC Creative were making, because they do all this amazing stuff for the BBC. They make it in-house, make all their promos and things, and they're stunning by and large. So what we did was we created this Easter egg hunt, this sort of scavenger hunt, this digital Easter eggs. The trailer had this QR code on this magazine. And if by some chance you scanned the QR code, it took you to a Google Doc, this letter from the chief of police about the department in Line of Duty. So there was a hidden link in one word in that Google Doc, but it was not out of context in the sentence, but it was just a bit of a strange addition to the sentence. Anyone who scrolled their mouse over the word here would go to a prescription, and that prescription existed on this little sort of image dumping ground where you could skewer a link. There was a Morse code buried within this prescription image you saw, and the Morse code is a web address, but you can't build the web address until you know what the Morse code is going to be, and you can't build the Morse code until you've got other things. It ended up being nominated for a Promax Award in London, so this big award ceremony for promotions on TV and film. I didn't even know it'd be nominated until quite recently, but it blew my mind that it'd be nominated, and it was just this is such a deep experience. But the earned media that came off the back, and by earned media, I mean just this media that we didn't plan, but ended up being written about, not only the show, but about this audience sort of pedagogical journey that people went through, these learning journeys. The people who saw it adored it. We could track the links as well. So 4,500 people scanned this QR code, which doesn't seem massive, but the media that came off the back of it was enormous. 4,500 people scanned the code, and about 200 people completed the whole thing because it was just so hard to do, really hard. It's worth having a look at Reddit for the Line of Duty Easter eggs, because all of that comes off the back of this insane idea and then this crazy person in Wales going, I think we can make this work.
I wonder, what is your proudest social media moment to date?
Oh my God. You should broadcast the silence.
a rarity, a rare moment in your life, Owen.
Is it social to say that I was one of the two individuals who pitched and subsequently won, and by won, I mean it was approved, We Are the Reason That the Wales, Scotland, and England flag emojis exist on handsets and devices worldwide today? Is that social enough?
Yeah. Tell us that story. How did that happen?
Wales famously got to the semi-finals of Euro 2016 in France. Amazing for Wales football. I was running BBC Wales social media throughout that, and that was fantastic in and of itself. But before that started, I had no idea how long it would take to get an emoji onto people's devices, but I thought there's no harm in trying this. So I got together with Jeremy Burge, and Jeremy Burge is an Australian man who ran a site called Emojipedia. So we worked together, we wrote this paper, submitted it to Unicode, who are the authority on keyboard characters, and they come together to decide which characters should exist. Emojis were invented in Japan, and they were character sets that you could access through key presses. Now it's really easy to access them on the emoji keyboard, but they get added to every now and then. But we were like, right, we want these to exist. We essentially wrote this paper and laid out the reasons and the rationale and how it could be done. We think it would get use, and it is not a transient thing. It's a historic thing. And, you know, I had people saying to me, how do you get the TARDIS emoji? I was like, you can't. It's a transient thing. And they approved it. You can't just have a transient thing. There are other methods of doing that kind of thing, like Twitter hashtags. But we got that, and it is the most exciting thing. There's a sense of weirdness to it because it's really associated with what I do. And it's such a strange one for me to think about this idea that they're the reasons that we wrote a paper and they're the reasons these digital ephemera exist everywhere for everyone and are used constantly. It's just that, in short.
I mean, that's an amazing one. Our final question, and this is a question that we'll be asking everybody on the podcast. If you had to delete everybody that you follow on your Twitter account, but leave just one account, who would it be and why?
Kat, it would be you. Just you, nobody
else. You're such a liar.
I know.
You're such a liar.
I am. You barely tweet, damn you. Hugh Edwards, the BBC news anchor, Hugh and I have this bizarre sort of professional personal working relationship where I DM things to him. I sent him this picture of him standing in front of the Welsh flag, and for reasons unknown, this image shot way up the tree in BBC, and the BBC asked him to take it down. And who being who, and rather brilliantly, he told everyone on Twitter he'd been asked to take it down, and it made news headlines that he'd been asked to take it down, at which point Welsh Twitter, and there are many of them, Welsh Twitter sort of jumped on board and changed all their Twitter handles to I'm Hugh Edwards, or changed their tweets to I'm Hugh Edwards, and put his name out like I'm Spartacus. And I just went, right, I can have some fun with this. So I changed my name to Hugh Edwards. I changed my avatar to Hugh Edwards. I then tweeted as Hugh Edwards and put up all these images of him doing amazing, stupid things as Hugh Edwards. Like him on a motorbike going, I'm Hugh Edwards, on a Pedregali Ducati, I'm Hugh Edwards. Jaws of steel, I'm Hugh Edwards. Bloody suns up, guns up, all this stuff. And it was hilariously fun. As a result, met the guy. We got on like a house on fire. And now we want to make a show together, by the way, but that's hilarious. And during the chat with him, I took his phone off him. And unbeknownst to him, I just tweeted the words Hugh Edwards from his phone because he didn't think I could get 10,000 likes in an hour. And I got 10,000 likes in about 20 minutes. But Hugh Edwards, October the 1st last year, I tweeted Hugh Edwards from his phone and it went crazy. As a result, I believe that October the 1st every year now is Hugh Edwards Day nationally in Wales and everywhere. But his editor called him News at 10 going, what are you doing? Do you know you're Googling yourself on Twitter? It was just insane. It was just, so yeah, possibly who, or you, or my wife.
Owen, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Social Creatures with me, Kat Anderson. Many thanks to Owen Williams of Simmel for joining me today and to Sprite Social for making this podcast possible. Make sure you catch the rest of the series by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform, where you can tune into a new episode of Social Creatures every 2 weeks. You can continue the conversation around today's episode by getting in touch on our social media at Sprite Social, or by sending your social media quandaries to our agony aunt Stacey by emailing soundadvice@spritesocial.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.